What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we have Mike McClure from The Great Divide. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on your show, man. I've heard good things.
Oh, thanks. That's great to hear. And, you know, I'm happy to have you on here. I know a lot of guys in Stillwater and around there, the red dirt scene, who, you know, when they talk about their inspirations, everything like that, you're one of the first names that come up. So it's great to have you on here finally.
Well, thank you very much, man. Thanks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, like, what are you up to, right? Like, currently with shows? I know the band's hitting the road, aren't they?
Yeah. We, our next big show is going to be at Kane's, and that's always a great show in Tulsa. Man, when is that? I should have my calendar handy.
You're good.
Put my eyes on. It's going to be in May. That's coming up. Yep. I've been in Hochatown. According to my notes here. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, Hochatown down in southeastern Oklahoma. Really cool part of Oklahoma. We're playing there on the 10th, May 10th, and then May 11th will be at Kane's Ballroom. And we've challenged ourselves to pull out some of the older songs that we haven't played in a long time. Like, one of them we hadn't played in probably 30 years, and we had a rehearsal last night and went over it. It's fun. It kind of adds a little life back into us after we...
Yeah.
Because we can get in that habit of playing the same set. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to open with this, and it goes into this, and then... And it's real. You get real comfortable and kind of complacent, you know, and then so... Mm-hmm. So we changed up the set list. Everybody's like nervous now. So it's good. It's good when they're nervous, you know.
Yeah. So I get, after all this time, do you still get those jitters every once in a while? I imagine a place like Kane's, just with it being such a historical place, that might be a venue you might get that or something.
I get butterflies before it. Mm-hmm. I've got to walk up and be in front of people. You know, it's not something I set out dreaming to do, you know. It's like... I was more of a writer and a guitar player. And then, you know, I'm not hungry for people to look at me, you know. And,
I gotcha.
And so, but I do enjoy playing my songs and our songs. And so, yeah, but anytime I'm about to walk up, if it's an acoustic gig where there's 30 or 40 people, I still get just nervous. And I've done it a million times. It's not that. It's the breaking that wall of between you and the crowd. You know, there's a wall there, and it's good to break that wall and everybody come together, you know? And so,
yeah, for sure. When you, I guess it's been shit, maybe like 2 years now, since your newest album, right? Providence, around 2 years, maybe a year and a half.
Up on 2 years.
Yeah, so when you guys went out to play songs off that, were you, like, nervous or curious about the fan reaction to that? How'd that all go down?
Well, you know, and it's interesting. The good thing with those is we got so many of them on the radio, and they did so well at radio. You know, mm-hmm. we put out three singles so far, and all three went to number one in on the Texas chart. And, that really helped, you know, people being familiar with them. And then the old fans bought the record and learned the song, and they listened to the whole record, you know, cause that was, we always tried to put out an album, you know, not 10 songs of, oh, this could be a hit song. It was always try to take you on some sort of journey.
Yeah.
Cause all my favorite records growing up, you know, they were all over the place. You know, they took mm-hmm. you on a journey. Took you up, down, made you feel, made you cry. All these things, you know.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately, like, these days, like, with the age of streaming, and, like, I feel like a generation like mine, it's almost like we were born without an attention span. So all we do is listen to singles and more singles. How do you – I guess just what are your thoughts on that, like, today's – I guess, era when it comes to just dropping singles instead of, like, putting together a full album, like you said?
Well, what's interesting, you say that, like, very recently, my wife and I, we have a folk duo called Crow and Gazelle, mm-hmm. and we just put an album out, and we had to order some CDs for radio, and some radio stations in the folk world still want a CD to listen to the whole album. And,
yeah.
And so we got it. And we were talking, do we even have a CD player? You know, because they've been phased out of automobiles. And well, our van's a 2017, our Sprinter van. And so we got the CD out and listened to it. And it's like, oh, that was kind of cool. And then, so while we were out on the road, we started stopping at antique stores or junk shops and buying CDs for like $2 a piece.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, look, here's a Bob Dylan album. Here's a Willie Nelson album I haven't heard in forever. But that all kind of stems into, I started turning my phone off, you know, mm-hmm. about a month ago. I just said, I'm going to turn it off today and leave it off. And I was surprised at how many times I reached for it, you know. And I,
yeah,
I was one of those go to bed scrolling, wake up scrolling. And, mm-hmm. and I just decided, what would happen if I didn't do that? So I started turning my phone off, and then I started getting bored. And instead right. of the instant gratification of my phone, you know, appeasing my boredom, I start making up a song in my head, or I've read 5 books this month.
Oh, wow.
You know, just because I'm not using the phone as for that anymore. Like, yeah. I get all my reading from just reading junk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of reading. But now it's like, okay, I'm bored. You know, all I have, if I'm not going to get online or my, you know, Google something to read or scroll or all the yeah. myriad of shit we do.
Right.
If I'm not doing that, I've been writing songs. I've been, you know, so it, I'm paying attention to that. It's like, mm-hmm. man, those phones, while they're handy, they also zap our attention spans. And,
yeah.
and you're just constantly pulled out of the moment that you're in. And, mm-hmm. man, most everything can wait.
Yeah.
you know,
yeah.
at least a couple hours, at least three. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, it's like, I don't know. It's an interesting phase. I'm trying to keep it going, you know, trying to be on it as little right. as I can. And what that's done is made me go and dig out my vinyls and,
mm-hmm.
and my thing you can touch, you know,
yeah.
like now there's yeah. nothing to touch, you know, it's right. all. And Spotify's brilliant. You know, those algorithms are just brilliant. They'll show you stuff that you like, oh, I do love that algorithm, yeah. Lords. I love that. And, and that's how you get your music out there. And it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword, I think. Mm-hmm. I think if you can balance them out, that's probably good. You know, and
right.
like, I only do this. But, God, I was looking at my phone and just seeing – how many hours I'm on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now it's down. Now I only really use it when I'm driving as far as for a map. You know, I did a few
sure.
maps. I printed off some maps and did the real old school and got lost once. I was like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to use the, you know, just as an experiment to see what can happen, you know, and
yeah.
so far it's been really interesting, especially, you know, I'm driving down the road looking at how many people are looking at their phone while they're driving. It's stacked. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you drive, but I'm on the highway for hours.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's scary.
It's semi-drivers, you
yeah.
know, just weaving all over the road looking at their phone. It's, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just trying to mix in as much analog as I can.
Yeah, I think that's. That's a good thing to do. And I'm probably an exception from my people like around my age, because like, I don't know if I want to credit it to my parents being like having me listen to like the classic rock growing up and all that. But like, I think part of the vinyl, well, first off, I think there's like a vinyl boom coming back, whether it's just because of the novelty or nostalgia of it, or whether people actually like it. But like, I personally, like you mentioned, like the physical touch in the uh-huh. media and like, the album cover itself, that's artwork. You know, it can be. Like, that's what it is.
So yeah.
I think that's good, seeing that come back. And who knows, maybe CDs will come back. I'm even seeing some artists, like, they're putting out, like, cassette tapes and yeah. stuff like that.
Yes.
Like, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, cassette tapes will have a little comeback till people want to hear, like, the fourth song on this side. And they're going, like, where's that? You know?
Yeah.
Just like with, I think it's holding the artifact. You know, when we mm-hmm. do our records, we'll print a vinyl and there'll be like a digital card in there, you know, so they can have a download. But people want that thing. They want to look at it. They want to read. And I like putting lyrics in there because I write them, you know, and I like seeing them. And what was cool about when we were out on the road recently is buying those CDs. My wife would be in the seat reading the lyrics as we're listening to it. I'm like, what did they say there? And that whole experience, you know, was, I guess you could do that on your phone, but it just, it's not the same. There's something about adding touch to it and the tactile part of it, you know, I think is, it is nostalgic, but also it just puts you in the moment with it instead of like, it's kind of an afterthought, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking the other day how any song you want to hear, you type it in and there it is.
Yeah,
and just thinking back to my generation straddled the internet. You know, it was before the internet existed, and you know, you'd hear about a song, and then you would go. And I remember finding Willie and Merle's "Poncho and Lefty."
Yeah,
it was on the radio. I was probably 10 or 11, and I went to this TG&Y, and they would have 45s in the top 40, and you know, numbered, and you'd flick through and find the single you wanted. And I remember buying at that one and just thinking, like, if I wanted to hear a song, I had to ride my bike about 3 miles, you know, like one of those uphill both ways stories. But
oh yeah,
you bring it home and set it down, and you know, your attention span was, you put some skin in the game to get that record.
Yeah,
to where now it's right, you push a button and there it is, and it's kind of boring, you know. It's it's that way with so many things, you know. If you get all of it, it's kind of, the fun's
too much.
Yeah, it is. And I think what I walked away with over this past month is like, I'm consuming too much information, you know, it's just, and our brains aren't built for that, you know, and now they're putting chips in there so we can, but just this model human, I don't think we're built for that. And
no,
and just the sheer amount of like reading the news. I quit reading the news. I'm tired of that. It's
that's a good thing to shut off is the news. Like I, like any news outlet, it's like, I'm clueless to it now. And it makes me a lot happier.
Yeah, me too. You know, I got sucked into it during 2020 and just sucked. And you know, everybody thought they were right. And everybody's arguing over their version of the truth. It's like, you know what? I'm going to sit this down. I'm going to rise above this and get back to doing what I do, which is make music, love people, play songs for people. And
yes, sir.
Anyway, that's what I've been doing. You asked what I've
been doing. No, that's awesome, man. I agree. Totally agree. But I do want to, let's go back in time a bit here, Mike. I'm curious. So I moved to Stillwater. I'm no longer there. I moved back, but I was living there for a couple years. I think it was like around 2019 into 2020. And I had no clue about the Red Dirt music scene. I'm from Northern Kentucky, so I, you know, clueless to it. And I get down there and I was just immersed in this history and this like entire sub genre, you know, like its own culture. And it sucked me in, man. And it's crazy to learn about it. I read the book. I believe his name's Josh Kretschmer. I might have just which is, you know, great book and everything. Kudos to him. And that was wonderful.
Yeah. Josh went to school at OSU, and he was there at ground zero of all this stuff. And he's a great writer.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I'd like to have him on here, honestly, one of these days. Yeah, that'd be cool.
With him, he's working on a book about Wyatt Flores and the Great Divide and some other stuff. Yeah, yeah, he's
awesome.
Yeah, he'd be a good guest on here.
Yeah, for sure. But I was wondering, just since you were like, you were there in the beginning of the big boom and like with you guys, Ragweed. I don't know what to call it, you know, we'll call it the big boom for now. But what was the when you were first starting out playing, what was the like culture like in Stillwater or in that area, that region? And is it very different than what it became, or is it relatively the same? Like what's your view on that?
Well, when I went there, I didn't know anybody in town, and I was playing my guitar at my apartment, Wicklow Apartments, over on 51. And this next door neighbor guy I met and became friends with, he goes, "Hey, I got some friends that are starting a band. They're in a band. They need a lead guitar player." And it was three of the Great Divide guys and this other singer. So I went over there and I played guitar in a couple gigs, and they were doing top 40, and I was starting to write about that time, and I just wanted to do original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I left that band, and then I wrote three songs, and I wanted to record them, and I knew JJ from that experience and wanted him to play drums, and I played bass, and this other guy named Bob Grace sang on these three songs, and then I had the cassette, that's how long ago it was, and that got dubbed and passed around like friends of ours and friends of JJ's and theirs, and people liked it, and we thought, well, let's make a band and do originals, and that's what the Great Divide became. And then we bought a PA, and then the guy from the music store, Brad James, who was also in a band called The Medicine Show, he came to show us how to set our PA up, and he played two songs checking it, and one was Used to Be by Tom Skinner and Bob Wiles, and the other was Restless Spirits by Bob Childers. And I'd never heard them before, and they really struck me as cool songs. And I asked him, I go, "What? Whose songs are those? Are those yours?" And he said, "No, but that's Red Dirt." And that's the first time I ever heard the words. And
oh, okay.
I said, "Oh, I like that." And he said, "Yeah, well, you should go check out the farm." And the farm was this old farmhouse out, what is it? East of town, is that right? Or west of town? One of the directions. Mm-hmm. West.
Yeah.
And anyway, I can find it. But I went out there, and well, Bob Childers showed up at me and Kelly, the bass player, we lived together, and he showed up at our house and said, "Hey, I'm a songwriter. Here's a CD of my songs," and gave us Circles Towards the Sun. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it, and at first I didn't like it, and then I just, for some reason, just kept listening to it, and then I loved it. You know, I really loved the songs, and Bob is kind of like a Neil Young, to where it might be an acquired taste for some.
Right.
You know, but after listening, I could hear the honesty in it, and like, oh, okay. And you know, he's got a different kind of voice. And Bob invited me out to the farm, and I went out there, and we traded songs. I really didn't know what to do. And we wrote a couple together, and then I just started hanging out, and everybody'd sit in circles out there and play and pass the guitar, you know, and then your turn to play one. And then, you know, you'd look at people's reaction to your song and then see if it was working or not. And then you could definitely tell when something wasn't working. And then you'd hear somebody play a really great song, which sends you back to the drawing board, you know. So there, that whole scene was awesome. And that was kind of my college while I was going to college. But then I moved in with a guy who opened a bar called the Wormy Dog. And Monday nights were slow. I was the only one in there drinking normally. And I asked him, I said, "Can I come play on Mondays? I'll just play for the door. No one's here anyway. I didn't have anything to lose. I'm up here anyway, if I can get free drinks."
Yeah.
So I started playing Mondays, and that started growing. And I'd have like 200 people up there on a Monday. And then I got Cody a slot. He sat in with me for a while, and I introduced everybody to him. He did that for about a month, come every Monday for a month or two. And then he started playing Tuesdays, and then people started going and seeing him. And then he brought in, either Jason Boland or Stoney. I can't remember which one was first.
Right.
Brought them in, and then they brought in the other one. And so there was like all four of us playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah. And, you know, that was where we cut our teeth, and that's where we got a chance to really learn how to do what we do, you know, able to play in front of people, play your songs, also work in covers while you were working in your songs. You know, you didn't just bombard them with your originals. That at the time, it was, you know, it never was a really great listening. Like, there wasn't a lot of listening kind of places. It was kind of rowdy bars, you know, but we got through just by you know, starting playing those off nights. And then Cody, you know, he was going to come and he auditioned for The Great Divide, you know, when I first,
okay.
He was going to be a guitar player and another singer, and we were going to have all this going on. And then we wound up not doing that. And he was kind of bummed at first, but then he started Ragweed. And then, mm-hmm. you know, then that's when I started producing records, you know, they were one of my first bands to produce. And that was 377. And then I did all their studio ones after that.
Yeah.
But all of that goes back to that beginning of, that's what Stillwater was. It was coming and trying to figure out how to play your own songs for a living, you know?
Right.
And that was the goal. And that was mm-hmm. success. And we've been successful a long time because that was the bar, you know, that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
That's what was going to be success, was just doing this. And
right.
And that's all everybody still does, which is pretty great. You know, it's been a long run for everybody.
Yeah. And that is a great point. Like, that's where people want to go to make it, you know, like with their own songs and their own music. And you could kind of equate that maybe on a smaller scale, but you could equate that to like Nashville, just like kind of in that same, you know, mindset. Like, I want to go here to make it, like that kind of thing, because you're right. Like, it is like a constant, like, what do you want to call them? Like, classes of artists that all come in at once, maybe like how you guys did back then. And then you had Reed Southall.
Waves coming in. And, you know, there's like, there was this Great Divide wave. And then, oh, here comes the Cross Canadian wave. It's even bigger. And then, you know, Bowling and Stone. And then, oh, God, here's the tidal wave of Turnpike Troubadours. You know?
Yeah.
And it just keeps building, you know, and it, mm-hmm. it ebbs and flows, I'm sure, at some point, you know. Just when you think it can't keep getting any better, you know, it becomes a wider reach, you know. And a lot of that is just musical lineage back to mm-hmm. back to an area where we were all cutting our teeth and inspiring each other and all trying to do the same thing, which is make a living doing it. And we weren't going out to Nashville to do it. You know, Great Divide, we got signed because Atlantic Records called us to come out there because of what we were doing in Texas and Oklahoma. And, you know, we sold 20,000 copies of our independent CD, you know, before we signed, which was quite a bit, selling them at our shows. And, you know, hell, we made more money, honestly, because we got a bigger cut of it all.
Right. And that's like the impressive thing, because I hate to dog on, I feel like I'm always dogging on Nashville on this, because like I know more about like your guys' side of things than the Nashville side of things. Mm-hmm. But like, truth is, I mean, like, there is like, it is kind of more impressive, coming out swinging like you guys did and how everyone still does out there and reaching the success that they do when like they don't have like all the labels out there, like big labels. And like, you got guys that are like reaching that height, the same as a Nashville artist is nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of says something about the scene over there and like how the town is and just like that whole state, the Oklahoma, Texas area. Like, it's a powerhouse, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. You know, there's some good out in Nashville. There's like 30 Tigers and, you know, they put out a lot of really great artists that aren't really huge. I mean, some of them, mm-hmm. but they,
yeah.
you know, there's some people, the guy that started that company, his name's David Macias. The Great Divide was his first client on this thing called Sony Red Distribution. He started mm-hmm. this distribution chain and we were the guinea pig and the first one on, and it became a real big deal. But right. I like seeing his success. You know, there's some good cats out there. But, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of having to play the game, too, and that waters some stuff down, you know.
Yeah.
Good thing about when we got signed, it was on the condition that they weren't touching our music. We recorded with Lloyd Maines in Texas, and that's what we did. And they just basically bought our masters instead of us going recording new masters for them.
Okay.
On Breaking the Storm, our first one, they just bought it and repackaged it and shot some videos and put some makeup on us.
Yep.
Trying to polish the turd.
Going back, I want to ask you about the farm, because like when I was reading up like on in Josh's book, that was like a really interesting part to read about. It's like, I don't know what you want to call it, like a sanctuary. I don't know. I don't want to sound corny either, but like, you know what I mean?
That's a good word, because like for me, I grew up in a small town that there wasn't a whole lot of songwriters or artists or, you know, if there were, I didn't really know, you know?
Yeah.
So this was, and I met a few people that played music when I lived in my hometown. Well, one wound up, he plays drums for Seether now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we were in a band together. Well, kind of. We banged around in my dad's garage. A couple of high school gigs. But, you know, there wasn't a big bunch of people to be around and be inspired by. It was like, you know, moving from a small town to a bigger town, but still, Stillwater's pretty rural. And, you know, a lot of kids from country backgrounds. And but that was where, you know, for lack of a better term, the hippies were. People that were, bohemian, a little more open to stuff and into literature and into art and into music and into lyrics. And, you know, I've always been a hippie. And it was like, oh, here's my tribe, you know, finally coming from, you know, a small town to where, you know, there was a small group of folks, but this was like, I don't know, like people get when they go to Austin, you know, they're immersed in this totally different scene than their town that they grew up in. And then their worldview widens up a little bit. Mine did too. And then to be influenced by older guys who, like Tom Skinner, he really made me believe I was a songwriter. He's like, yeah. And, you know, encouraging to where, you know, encouragement isn't handed out all the time in any kind of art, you know. So that a little bit went a long way with me, and that was the farms where I first got my footing, you know. And
so that's kind of where you like you're cutting your teeth there too, though, like in front of your peers. Like, was it kind of like a, you kind of talked about earlier, like seeing, like playing a song to see if it's good or not, and you're like literally playing it in front of your buddies.
Yeah,
like is that kind of how it was? It's like that was like where you were the most creative, I guess.
Yeah, there were definitely some great spurts of creativity there. Just because you'd be in those circles and someone would play a song, and everybody's like, "Damn, did you hear that one?" Well, you want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And if they weren't going, "Damn, did you hear that one?" It inspired me to go back and dig deeper, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was everybody kind of sharpening their swords against each other, you know?
Yeah.
You know, getting stronger.
Yeah. Training. So speak. Right. Yeah, there we go.
And then, you know, we would go, everybody played shows with each other and kind of cross-pollinization. However you do that. And, you know.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, somewhere there's some
cross-pollination.
Cross-pollination.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm throwing a totitation in there somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
Mingling. It was great. Yeah, it was a fun time, you know, and I'd been, and we'd all grown up hearing the myths of Led Zeppelin and all the different music in this scene in Seattle and L.A. And then now we were kind of making our own scene, which was exciting. You know, it was. All a scene is a bunch of people coming together that are doing the kind of the same thing. And not that the music sounded the same, because it didn't.
Right.
Jason Boland doesn't sound like Ragweed, and Ragweed doesn't sound like Stoney or Great Divide. You know, it all sounded different, was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it was like that's my favorite thing about it.
Yeah. It wasn't a sound, really.
Yeah.
It was a, I don't know, just kind of a place and time. You know?
And
being inspired by a group of people, inspired by another group, because there was the Tulsa scene, you know, going back to Steve Ripley, who coined Red Dirt. I think, you know, he had Red Dirt Records. You know, Steve was the front guy for the Tractors. And he also built guitars for Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, wow.
It was Leon Russell's engineer. just all kinds of stuff. Anyway, he had a band called Moses, which I think if you start going backwards, when Red Dirt was used, I think that was the first, and that was
okay.
It was on, and he invented it, Red Dirt Records, and you know, and I think Jimmy LaFave was influenced by that, mm-hmm. and then, you know, by the time I came along, I'd heard, like, was told from Steve down to Jimmy, and then I hear Red Dirt, and then, oh, these songs are Red Dirt, and it's just kind of all these synchronicities popping off, and so at that time, I remember thinking, I want to be aligned with that, you know, I want to be Red yeah. Dirt, you know, what is it?
Yeah.
You know, well, here we go, I'm Red Dirt yep. too. And yeah, it's a welcoming awesome. Community, you know,
for sure. So with that creativity, as the years go on and you guys keep playing, like, and you keep writing, is that whether it is for the Great Divide or your own stuff or the duo act you're in, is it like has it changed the way you keep that creativity going, or like you keep the writing going? Like, what drives you to keep going, I guess?
I always like writing. My joy comes from getting a guitar, kind of just mumbling something and trying to make something new. You know, you might play mm-hmm. something that you know, and then, oh, that's a little different. What if I sang blah, 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 over, you know, and I'm talking to myself yeah. and wandering around, and that's really my favorite part. So, and I've always kept that going. I've put out probably 10 solo records, mm-hmm. in between Great Divide years. Mm-hmm. So I've always been doing that. What was cool with Great Divide is, you know, we talked a little earlier about being able to do new songs and not just looking in the rearview mirror. That was, all those songs, the most popular ones, I wrote in my 20s, you know, and my right. outlook on everything in my 20s, you know, which was pretty much drink, beer, yahoo, you know.
I sure. did that
for a long time. But now, you know, it was really cool to be, I'm going to be 53 this year. And back then, you know, 51, 52 of writing where I'm at now, you know, mm-hmm. and taking a look around.
Right. You're good.
Crazy wife out there talking about crazy your dog.
You're fun.
Yeah.
So like when you, we could just go back to Providence.
Writing those songs that was able to write from where I'm at now, you know, the first single was The Last I Heard, The World Had Ended. The world was ending mm-hmm. and everybody let each other down. You know, that's
yeah.
kind of coming out of 2020 and the world ending, and who knows what's going on.
Right.
But hang on one second.
You're good.
No, ma'am. I'm polite, she'll quit.
You're all good, man.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, writing new songs, and there's a lot of songs on there about getting older and looking at a half a century gone by and a puff of smoke, and
yeah,
you know, yeah. it's just it's the Great Divide, same guys, just different phase of life. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's my favorite part is being able to take a snapshot of whatever I'm going through, whether it was college and back road drinking, or whether it was where I'm at now, which is a little calmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it when you get in the studio with the guys? Like, is it you still have that same like energy, or like you guys still gel together like you used to, or has it like gotten even stronger?
It's kind of the same. You know, it's mm-hmm. interesting. It's I'll come in and I'll write the lyrics out with the chords on it, give it to everybody. I'll play it through a couple times, and then we'll all just kind of give it a go. You mm-hmm. know, and that rumble of it kind of coming to life is always fun, because, you know, everybody just, they play their part of the Great Divide. You know, Scott plays rhythm guitar. He's going to play rhythm to whatever I'm doing, you know, and right. Kelly's going to play the bass. Jay's going to, you know, I send them to him little clips of just me playing it, and then they can listen. And, you know, Jay's kind of plotted out what he wants to do. And, you know, I'll record it to a click to where if they want to hop in the studio and really, you know, yeah. flush it out right, you know, to the right tempo and everything, you know, we do that. Yeah. But then when we all come in that room, it's magic. It's because when we first go over it, we're not all mic'd up. We're just sitting in a circle and mm-hmm. we're all just kind of playing it and listening to it. And like, after a while, I was like, everybody got it? All right. And then we'll go and we'll cut it. You know, we might run through it 10 times, maybe more, mm-hmm. maybe less, maybe catch it right off the bat. But yeah. That's the fun part. And I don't ever mind doing it over and over and over. Or catching right. something, you know, one time and go, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. It's good to hear that you guys are still, you know, it's magical still, is the way you put it. Like, that's great to hear.
It really is, because it's all those years and all that. Mm-hmm. There are times when I was in the wilderness and we were all pissed off at each other. And all that stuff just goes away, and you're right back to where you started, which was the music. Yeah. And, man, I think that just sends out this energy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel it, I feel it, and it gets thrown back at you.
Yeah.
It's a hell of awesome, a job. Man. A hell of a job.
Yeah.
Hell of yeah. a career.
let's talk a bit about you producing and stuff like that, because that always interests me, the production aspect of the industry, because basically I'm just completely ignorant of it and I like hearing about it. So I guess if you want to remember back, what got you into like producing? You said you produced for like Ragweed, and I believe, didn't you do all their records?
Yeah, all their studio ones. I didn't do the live mm-hmm. one or Carney, that one. Well, I was the only guy Cody knew that had been around somebody that made a record. You know, we had just made, I guess we'd done two records with Lloyd Maines, you know, our first mm-hmm. one, and then our Breaking the Storm record. And I think it was about that time. And Cody called me and said, hey, would you be interested in producing? And I said, I'll give it a try. You know, I knew how it was supposed to go, you know, mm-hmm. just from watching Lloyd and how we put our records together. And I thought, well, I can give that a try, you know. And so we cut 377 and we had 5 days to record and mix the album, which is mm-hmm. a lot. I mean, not a lot. A lot to do in a short amount of time, you know, 3 days right. of tracking and 2 days of mixing. But you know, we got in there and made a record, and you can hear the greenness on it all the way around, but it's still a great, great record. And they just kept, I did another couple records, and then they got signed to Universal South.
Okay.
And during that time, when we started to make their album Garage, which was 05, a guy named Joe Hardy, the label had hired him to mix. Well, Joe did Steve Earle's.
ZZ Top?
Yeah, ZZ Top.
Oh, okay. Sorry to cut you off.
No. And anyway, so I was over the moon to work with this guy because I had all these records, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. wow, I remember your name from reading the liner notes.
Yeah.
And Joe and I hit it off, and he became my partner, and, you know, I would produce other records. I did a Whiskey Myers record. On one of their first ones, maybe their first one. I don't remember which one it was. And Joe mixed that, and then we started working more and more, and we did The Damn Quails. We did Katie Butts, Same Hell, Different Devil, Turnpike Troubadours. We did, that was the first album that I engineered. Joe had taught me. He's like, I'm going to send you a program, teach you how, and he taught me how to record.
Okay.
And because usually I was just hired as a producer, and I would like help get the songs arranged and come in with the band. And, you know, he was teaching me how to run the computer, record,
get physically do it.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Okay.
That engineers do. And he trained me how to do that. And Turnpike was my first guinea pig band in there. And
hell of a guinea pig.
Yeah, we did Diamonds and Gasoline. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty good start.
Yeah.
I had like a 2-channel that I'm just learning, you know. And they're a brand new band. Well, they've been around a little while. They had Bossier City out. But I recorded backwards. I put the drums on last at this other guy's studio. And we just hung out at my house in the basement and made that record. And then I did the same thing with the Damn Quails, and they're down the hatch. They have Fool's Gold and California Open Invitation, all that stuff on it. Just really a cool run. And then after, you know, you do a few records that people like, they start coming to you. And
yeah.
I did that for a while. And then, just kind of got burnt out, I guess. I worked around the clock for years. And then I sold that place in Ada, and then I moved, and for three years I didn't do a record for someone else, you know. And then where I'm sitting now, I've just built a little studio. It's next to my house, and I've just started recording some other people and getting back into it. I still like it, you know.
Yeah.
I just kind of got a little fried just from so much, and then always having to be on top of somebody's mixes and where's this, where's that? I'm on the road. Just, you know, when COVID shut everything down, I shut down completely.
Yeah.
And I liked it.
Yeah, that's fun. That's hilarious you say that, because that's what a lot of you guys like say. Like, obviously, it's terrible. You can't play shows, all that. But
it's bad. But
yeah,
but, you know, the part of stopping, and I've never stopped since I've been 21.
Yeah,
and it's like, what the hell do people do? And then I enjoyed it. I started growing a garden. I started tinkering around, and it's like I need to make some money. Facebook Live and tips, and that was a wild little period, wondering what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm back.
That's awesome, man.
I'm back at it. I'm working on a project with a guy, another dude, a guy named James Cook. He's recording, and I recorded a guy named Kevin Foster in here the other day. He plays for Kyle Nix and the
38.
Oh, yeah. 38. Yeah, he's a banjo fiddle mando guy. We were recording some of that in here, and it's good to get back in it. I'm liking it.
That's awesome.
We'll see.
That's awesome. So I guess the big question now, Mike, is like, what do you guys got coming down the pipe, whether it be solo stuff, Great Divide stuff, anything like that, any new music we could be looking forward to?
Yeah, my wife and I's album, that Crow and Gazelle,
it's
called As Above So Below. Us Above Now, So Below. Yeah. That one I'm proud of. That's out. Great Divide. We'll be doing a new record probably before too long. I'm going to have to write it. I just got through writing this one with my wife and getting it out. We're going to be on the Grand Ole Opry for the first time.
That's what I was going to ask you next. It's awesome.
It's going to be wild. You know, you hear that your whole life, and then it's like, oh, man, in July we're going to go.
About fucking time.
Yeah. 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 We get three songs, man. I don't know what the hell to do. I don't know.
You got them narrowed down at all?
I want to do Good Side just because it's the new one and kind of the tone of the whole redemption arc of the band. But I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. We'll flip coins.
Right. That's awesome. Well, hell yeah, Mike. I appreciate you hopping on. I actually have one more thing I wanted to ask you. We hit on it before. We were talking about like how the scene, the Red Dirt overall scene, has been when you first started to where it is now. But like, do you have any like, are there any artists right now that like are your like, you don't have to make favorites, but like that you could like recommend to another person, or like any like, what are your current thoughts on like these current bands coming up?
Oh, man, you know, it's not sure I know current stuff, you know. Now I'm going to festivals, I'm like, who are these people? Now I'd see the old guy in the corner, like, not knowing who all the young up-and-comers are. There is a girl named Autumn Raglan.
Okay.
She's a really great writer. I really liked her songwriting. I did some recording with her back a little bit. Man, James Cook impresses me.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first guinea pig here at this studio. I said, you can come in for free for a few days while I get my feet back under me. But I really like his songs. He's from Wichita Falls. He's a radio guy too. He is at, the Outlaw. It's a radio station in Wichita Falls. Really great songwriter, cool singer, cool dude. You know, it's there's always, now that I've kind of dipped my toe back into recording, I'm starting to get a few messages here and there, and are you doing that again? And you know, and the way I that's how I found everybody. It's just, I had a recording studio, you know, mm-hmm. and I wasn't that expensive, and I'd work with bands, you know, I didn't care. You know, and then, you know, people would come in and record and have a good time and have mm-hmm. a good record when they were done. Joe taught me how to make a good record. And,
right.
Yeah, so I'm going to be messing with that. I got to get a bathroom out here, though. I need some running water in this thing.
Yeah, can't go without that anymore. What about your tour dates coming up? You hit on that too earlier, but I figured we could ask about that again.
Well, hold on, young man.
I should have it pulled up on my end. I'm the one lacking here.
Well, we got. When is this going to air?
This is gonna air.
It's airing now.
I want to say 2 weeks, maybe three. So I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Coming up next, I'm gonna be at the Hotel Turkey out in Turkey, Texas. That's on May 7th.
Right on.
That's a cool place. Home of Bob Wills days in Turkey, Texas. They've got this real cool hotel from the 20s, and Bob Wills used to play out there, and. They have a great restaurant and they do live music. Middle of nowhere, but all these little towns come into it. Turkey, Texas.
Yeah.
What else is coming up? Heck, I don't know. Oh, we're going to be in Green Hall, June 5th.
Oh, that's a big one.
That's down in New Braunfels, Texas, real legendary hall. That's June 5th. It'll be about 115 degrees in there. Grand Ole Opry, July the 10th. We're going to be recording.
July 10th.
I don't know when that airs. Then we hit the Rev Room in Little Rock, July the 11th on the way home. Paul Huska.
Oh, yeah. Wait, were you going to be for Cavalcade?
Yo. Huh?
Where's in Paul Huska? Yeah.
I think that's the rodeo. That's July 19th.
Okay, cool.
Then the Wild Plum Jam in Sayre, Oklahoma. That's out western Oklahoma.
Right on.
Folks, if you can't find something in there to make, you just ain't trying hard enough, you know?
Yeah. You all could Google. We don't need Mike to keep reading off dates. Yeah.
Who wants a doddering old man to read his title?
Oh, man.
TGDmusic.com, like The Great Divide, TGD. TGDmusic.com.
Right.
And that's
right.
That has our dates on there and all that stuff. And if you're interested in me personally, MikeMusic.com.
Yep.
Come on there.
Awesome. There you go. Get those plugs out there. You're ahead of the game, Mike. I was about to ask you if you had anything to promote, and you already got it.
It's my MySpace page. I'm pretty excited.
Oh, awesome. Well, man, thank you again for talking to you. This was a great conversation. I had a great time.
Anytime. Holler back at me later.
Yeah, for sure. And also, guys, after you check out Mike, check out Rage Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We have a website. We're on all the social medias, all that fun stuff. And thanks again for listening.